Any other points? Anyone with seat? Seems to be. Is he actually suffering from his past karma?
He's not suffering as such. I mean, the fact that he actually went through all the first that he's doing is because of his past karma.
Prabhupada says in the purport that when a devotee reaches the level of prema, there is no karma. Any other points?
Just the bhaktan, the Lord to bring him back to the physical world. So that is why this whole bhaktan is happening, that the Paramis are bringing him back. The devotees, he's become karma because they are related to him. Because of the Lord's plan, he's accomplishing that by Parvati casting him to go back to that, become the Rasura and then the next guy to go back.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons. One possible
reason. Yes, you mentioned the characters of the two zero devotees which are coming here. So Maharaj is able to give it in the desire in Allah and the way to take up put in the suffering. This is part of the lecture. It's part of the devotee which we are calling from the words for the Dhamma or the allocation. And then you also mentioned the quality of Parashiva.
Tonight we'll finish the chapter. We're hearing how Parvati has cursed Chitraketu and how Lord Shiva is instructing Parvati that it was incorrect for her to have cursed a pure devotee. So now we'll hear how Shiva gives his final instruction to Parvati, and then we'll finish this chapter. And tomorrow night we'll begin chapter 18, and then chapter 19, and then the candle is finished. And then we'll be having our final exams, and then we'll end the Bhakti Vaibhav course. First six cantos of the Bhagavad Gita. So. Then we'll pray to Giriraj, and next year we can study Bhakti Vedanta, cantos 7 to 12. So tonight we'll go from verses 34 to 41. The magnanimous Chitraketu is the dear devotee of the Lord. He is equal to all living entities and is free from attachment and hatred. Similarly, I am also very dear to Lord Narayan. Therefore, no one should be astonished to see the activities of the most exalted devotees of Narayana, for they are free from attachment and envy. They are always peaceful, and they are equal to everyone.
It is said, Vaishnavera Kriya Mudra Vikina Na Bhujat Chukbhujhaya. One should not be astonished to see the activities of the exalted liberated Vaishnavas. As one should not be misled by the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, One should also not be misled by the activities of his devotees. Both the Lord and his devotees are liberated. They are on the same platform. The only difference being that the Lord is the master and the devotees are servants. Qualitatively, they are one and the same. In Bhagavad Gita 9.29, Lord says, Sammoham sarva bhuteshu name devyasu sinapriya kya bhajanti tumam bhaktya mai te teshu chapyaham. I envy no one, nor I am partial to anyone. I am equal to all, but whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend in me, and I am also a friend to him. From this statement by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it is clear that the devotees of the Lord are always extremely dear to him. In effect, the Lord Shiva told Parvati, both Chitraketu and I are always very dear to the Supreme Lord. In other words, both he and I are on the same level as the servants of the Lord. We are always friends, and sometimes we enjoy joking words with us, between us. When Chitraketu loudly laughed at my behavior, he did so on friendly terms, and therefore there was no reason to curse him. Thus, Lord Shiva tried to convince his wife Parvati that her cursing of Chitraketu was not sensible.
That's good. What are the points in the first paragraph?
The retreat, Suryendra was doing Leela Ketan. And the Leela Ketan, he took up the pastime wherein Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu shows the same form which he showed to Arjuna, the battlefield of Kurukshetra, based on Advaita Acharya's request. And then he said that after that, then Lord Nityananda also came and had the same darshan. But they had some interaction wherein they demonstrated a pastime where they were very angry and chastising each other. So Advaita Acharya was telling Lord Nityananda, what are you doing here? You are an avadhut, you don't have anything. People like you should not come here and have this darshan, something like that. And then Lord Nityananda says, you don't know who I am, it's my shame, I want you. So there, in the conclusion, Bhujan Prabhu mentioned, while reading that, Chaitanya Charitamrita, that anyone who takes either side of devotee and judges the other devotee, it will not get Krishna Prabhu. We have to be careful. We have to understand these are Leela between two very exalted personalities. Don't take any sides. Here also.
Any other point? So Prabhupada is pointing out in the purport that the Vaishnavas are always liberated. Liberated means?
We have two more dimensions.
They are beyond the influence of the material
energy.
So this is the nature of a pure devotee, a Vaishnava. He doesn't have any influence of the modes of material nature. So because they do not have any influence of the modes of nature, then they do not behave towards each other in a material way. But rather they behave to each other on the spiritual platform. So devotees, as they become more advanced and more purified in consciousness, then they act towards each other on the spiritual platform. So even if there's some apparent misunderstanding, still the devotees, they do not react inimically towards each other, or it doesn't become a heated situation. In other words, they work it out very peacefully. So that is the nature of the advanced devotees or the purified devotees. The neophyte devotees, they argue amongst each other. The neophyte devotees, they will have some friction in their relationships because they don't understand how to relate to each other properly because they're not purified in their consciousnesses yet. So when someone is not purified, he's not advanced in Krishna consciousness, he's not liberated, then he may act in a materialistic way. So you'll understand if you see devotees are not able to work things out easily and peacefully, you can see this means they're still contaminated in their consciousness by the modes of material nature. But when someone is more advanced, then they can work things out quite easily with other devotees, even though there may be differences or disputes like that, but
it doesn't become a contaminated situation. So it says here that Parvati, she cursed Lord Shiva. This is not an acceptable activity. Yeah, she cursed Maharaj Chitraketu. And this is not acceptable for a pure devotee to curse another devotee, or even for any devotee to curse another devotee. It's not an acceptable behavior. Now, if you read the Shastra, sometimes in certain scriptures, it is mentioned that there is cursing between exalted personalities. Even sometimes it mentions there is cursing that takes place in the spiritual world itself. So sometimes these explanations are given that Radharani was cursing Subal, Subal was cursing Radharani, and this one became, even Narayan got cursed, and then he became Shalagram, and Brinda Devi becomes cursed, she becomes Tulsi, and then different curses are taking place. So for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas at least, and for those who are more purified in consciousness, we don't accept those explanations. Because it is described by the Goswamis that the Puranas are divided into three different categories according to the modes of material nature. So six of the Mahapuranas are considered to be primarily in the mode of goodness, six are primarily in the mode of passion, and six are for those in the mode of ignorance. So you'll hear these descriptions taking place, but they're not actually for the purified devotees, and especially for those who study the Srimad Bhagavatam, who take shelter of the Bhagavad philosophy. We don't accept those explanations, actually. So a number of years ago in ISKCON, these pastimes, they became prevalent. And everyone started repeating these pastimes and explaining these pastimes like this. But actually, for the Gaudiyas, we don't accept these explanations. There is no cursing in the spiritual world. Radharani never curses Subal. Subal never curses Radharani. No one curses the Lord. The Lord is not cursing back. So it never took place like that. It may be an explanation for those who are in the mode of passion or the mode of ignorance, so they can have some reconciliation of things. But factually speaking, these things are not taking place. And we don't accept them in our tradition. And it's not accepted. So we don't give those explanations. Even you'll hear, there are these stories are there, and sometimes you'll hear devotees tell them in classes, but actually it's not acceptable or correct for us. So we should not repeat these stories as the explanation. For Brinda Devi, who is the original form of Tulsi in the spiritual world, the Gopi, who is the art director in the spiritual world, whenever Radha and Krishna arrive at a place, Brinda Devi, she is one of the Gopis, she decorates the forest accordingly for the pleasure of their pastime. So she will choose which colour flowers will bloom on that particular at that particular time for this pastime. She will decorate the forest. She will instruct which animals will come. And they have different, different groves, like different huts around the pastime area. And within those groves or in those huts, in those little places, they store all the paraphernalia for the pastime. All the different fruits are there, and the different drinks are there, and all the different flowers are there, and all the paraphernalia necessary. So she organizes all of this. So Radha and Krishna were very satisfied with her service. So they called for her, and then Krishna said, "You have to ask a benediction, because you're doing so much nice service for us." So then she thought, "I just want the benediction that wherever you go, I will be there to serve you." So then Krishna thought about that, and then he thought, "Well, I go many places. I expand all over the universe in so many different forms. There are so many deities in so many different universes like that." So then he made the arrangement through Narada in the Narada Pancharatra, that wherever the Lord is worshipped in the Archavigraha, in the Srimurti, then it is enjoined, the instruction is given by Narada, wherever the deity is worshipped, Tulsi must be offered to the deity. So then, when the Lord takes his different forms as the deity in so many different universes, then Brinda Devi, she takes the form of Tulsi Devi, and then she is always offered to the Lord. So in this way, she can always be with Krishna. She can always be of service to Krishna. So that's our explanation of how Brinda Devi came to the material world. Not that there was cursing and counter-cursing. It's not pleasant. You know, Krishna doesn't curse, and the devotees don't curse, and you know, it's not. So we don't tell the explanation like that. We don't accept that explanation, actually. It's that Radha and Krishna had a desire to come. So then Krishna came, Radha came, and Brinda Devi came, and the different associates came because of Krishna's desire. That's why everyone comes to the material world. So there's no such thing as cursing and counter-cursing like that. So Shiva is saying to Parvati, this is not proper. You cannot curse a pure devotee like this. And you see how Chittaketu reacts. You know, here's Chittaketu saying, you know, what's just happened, and then he begins to counter-curse. You see, back in the beginning of the fourth canto, the Dakshid Yajna, as soon as there was cursing on one side, then there was cursing on the other side. This means that the consciousness is contaminated by the modes of material nature. Passion and ignorance are present. Otherwise, they wouldn't be reacting like this. Because if you're in the mode of passion, if someone criticizes you, what do you do immediately? Yeah, you counteract. Someone says, oh, you did this. And you say, oh, yeah, but you did this. Just like I might say, you came late for class. And then they say, yeah, but you came late for class. So that's mode of passion. Then immediately you'll counteract like that. Or you'll speak inappropriate. When you're being corrected, even in your mind, you might not say it externally because you're holding some etiquette. But in your mind, you say something. Someone chastises you, and then immediately in your mind you think, you know, how can they say this to me like that? Yeah. Even some very senior devotee, even the guru, may chastise you in your mind, and you think, you know, how can they chastise me like this? Like that. So this can be the mentality. So that means the mode of passion or ignorance is contaminating the consciousness. But the pure devotees, they don't counteract like that. You see that Chittaketu came before Parvati and he bowed his head and he said, I accept this curse. Because he's liberated. His consciousness is free from the modes of nature. So he doesn't need to react. So you can test actually yourself. You'll see how transcendental you have become in your consciousness, how much you react when someone insults you. How do you react? Do you just take it or do you respond? Like that. So it's a big test, actually, and Krishna will test you. He will reveal it to you. Just like Mother Jagatarini was saying the other day at the retreat in her class, that sometimes Krishna will expose the devotee to make everyone realize what is your position. Sometimes he may try to expose you. So Krishna may try to reveal one of your faults to you, but because you can't see it yourself, then Krishna exposes it to everyone. So then you can understand that you have this problem or fault. So the pure devotee, he does not respond in a material way because he's free from the influence of the material modes. So we have to test our consciousness and we will see Krishna will reveal to us where we're actually at, how transcendental we are. Okay, any points? I think Russell first.
I was just thinking that you explained responded, but not on material way, because you know, someone if perceives something and accuses something, I think the other side has the right to explain it. You know, it's not the way you saw it, it's not the way, you know, like it's not because of attack or counter-attack or reaction, it's just to clarify the situation, and I think the Chitrapada also explained it. He was not upset, but he said it was like this, this, and this. So this is also a response, but I think proper response.
If you understand that Parvati has wrongfully cursed Chittaketu, does she get any reaction for that?
Not mentioned.
but she gets a reaction. Well, she does get a reaction. She gets chastised by her husband. What does the husband say? Yeah, you've not acted properly. So she did get a reaction like that.
I was thinking, no one is more elevated than Mother Parvati. She's such a beautiful devotee, and, you know, and but still, we can see how she was still emotional, like a female. You know, she was emotional that she wanted to go on the Daksha Yagya, on the Yagya that Daksha performed. So she didn't, Shiva was reasoning, you know, this is not good because this, this, and this, but she was impelled by the emotion. And then she got hurt. More easily, Shiva didn't get hurt, but he got upset because of Sati. And here we can see again that she got a bit emotional and reactive. It seems like women are more emotional and less rational.
Really?
I don't know, seems like. I don't want to admit that, it seems like.
Okay. We'll see what Prabhupada says in the purport. It's coming up tonight, so.
What is our understanding? Is Parvati the higher devotee or Chitra to the higher devotee?
Same. Prabhupada says Shiva and Chitraketu are like same, so. The one thing is that even sometimes we get cursed by the, not cursed, but we may get chastised by the senior devotee. And even the senior devotee might have made a mistake, but still we take that as mercy. I remember my godbrother, Mahahari Prabhu. My Guru Maharaj got in his case, right, different times. I remember one time he got on his case, Savalkas Maharaj was doing a jagya, and Mahahari Prabhu, he was like assisting Tamal Krishna Maharaj. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj was yelling at him and like chastising him. And he hadn't done anything wrong. It was actually Tamal Krishna Maharaj who made a mistake. Like the Brahman threads, I don't know, something, I can't remember what the details were, but he was saying, where are the Brahman threads? And he was like really chastising him. The Brahman threads were just like right next to him or something like that. But he was like yelling at him, you know, where are they? And, you know, why did you forget them and everything? And Mahahari, he, instead of reacting, or instead of even like explaining himself, he just accepted that. And later on, some of my godbrothers, they said, why didn't you say something or like that? And he said, well, I took that as mercy. He said, because I've done so many things wrong in the past, and I didn't get picked up, or I didn't get corrected. So now, maybe I didn't make a mistake this time, but still I see, maybe I'm just getting some mercy. So when the senior devotee chastises us, then we should take it as mercy. We should see that actually this is for our benefit.
Yeah.
Even though we may not have done anything wrong, but still we take it like that. That's the correct attitude. Any other points? Form with the Lord. The Lord chooses to enter this material world in that particular form. Self-manifesting form.
We don't need to expand.
I don't know any more details than that. So that's all I know. I just explained some. If people ask, what is the Shalagram Seer? I say it's just that the Lord is manifested in that form. Like that. So it's the Lord's prerogative. Maybe there must be some reasoning behind it. I'm not sure what the reason is. But there's no cursing. No, Krishna is not forced by anyone's curse to become a stone. You can't force Krishna.
But is it because, I thought it was because of the love that he had on losing his Kusumara and
yeah, something like that. You could say, well, Krishna said to Brinda Devi, he said that wherever I go, then you will be offered to me. So he's appearing in so many forms so that she can be offered to him. So he's not bound by any curse. You can't curse Krishna and say, you have to become like that. Any other points?
I was hearing in a lecture about the diagram from the Lord, and it said that in the lecture it was said that the carvings which are there on the shaligram, like, you know, some shaligrams, some akya, some akurma, like that, that is done by an insect inside that river, the Gandaki River, and the prevalent professor was mentioning that why does the insect does not carve storm queens or, you know, some mundane personality? Why is that insect carving forms of the Lord? So it is the Lord who is inspiring that insect from within to carve this, and the Lord is showing that this is also one way in which I appear in this world. Like all the five elements the Lord appears as, so stone is also one of the earth, and stone, that is also one of the elements. So, you know, it is to show the amazement that even an insect is inspired to carve just the form of the Lord. It doesn't carve anything else. How does the insect know what form to carve? But it comes out as Natsya, Purma, Natsya, Mali form.
Actually, in Bhagavad Gita, I think Krishna says, I am Vajraketu, the form that I believe.
In Bhagavad Gita?
So, the name of the form is Vajraketu.
Vajraketu.
I don't think it's in Bhagavad Gita, though. Which
chapter?
Which chapter?
I think in the purports, maybe not directly in the show.
Maybe chapter 19? I think it's in the Gita, though, isn't it? Please let me know. Okay, any other points? Okay, so read the second paragraph. So, Jad Bhagavad, read paragraph number 2.
There is a difference between male and female that exists even in the higher stages of life. In fact, even between Lord Shiva and his wife. Lord Shiva could understand Chitrakirti very nicely, but Parvati could not. Thus, even in the higher statuses of life, there is a difference between the understanding of a male and that of a female. It may be clearly said that the understanding of a woman is always inferior to the understanding of a man. In the Western countries, there is now agitation to the effect that man and woman should be considered equal. But from this verse, it appears that woman is less. It's always less than that.
Thank you. Any points?
Srila Prabhupada says that the plane of the image is 36 ounces.
Mataji is not
your
guru. Mataji Prabhu is telling
you,
Mataji is not here.
Mataji is not here.
That's the story.
Say he's not allowed to speak.
He's the only one who can
speak. Any other points? Strong point, but it's not very popular in the modern society. We have to be very careful how we present these things. We have to become very expert on how we present these things. Can people read Prabhupada's books? You give the Bhagavad Gita on the street, or you distribute a Bhagavad Gita to someone you're preaching to. Chapter 1, Prabhupada says women are less intelligent. A lot of people don't read any further. Like that. It's a very difficult statement for people to digest in the modern age. So we have to be very expert in the way we present these things. We have to explain these things so people can palate them and understand them. So the way, we've discussed this before over the years, but the way that I generally emphasize is not so much that one is better than the other, but they are different. That's all. Men and women are different, like that. Women are much better at many things, right? Many, many things they're much better than men. So men can't say they're superior in every way because it's not true. You know, women are much better in so many different ways, and men are superior in other ways. So it's not so much a matter of one is better than the other, but one is different to the other. So that is the way we have to present it in the modern world, otherwise our preaching will not go very far. A lot of people won't become devotees. They'll be put off by these things. It's a big obstacle, actually. And there was a push a number of years ago in ISKCON that from the women, very senior women in our society, to remove these kind of statements in Prabhupada's books, to take these statements out of Prabhupada's books. Because intelligent women, they become very disturbed or disheartened when they read these kind of statements like that. There's many very intelligent women in the material world these days, and also in the devotional world these days. So it's very hard to say, you know, they're less intelligent, because a lot of the women are better managers than men. They're a lot more organized than men. You take a man and a woman on practically every single ability, and women can defeat men in so many ways. You know? So to say that the women are less intelligent and less this and less that, it can be a great obstacle to our preaching. So we have to become very expert in the way we preach. Even Srila Prabhupada said the women can become temple president. But then he said, but she still must listen to her husband. Prabhupada made that point. He said she can become the temple president even. In any of our temples, Prabhupada did not object that women become the temple president. He said, but she must listen to her husband. So there is a difference between man and woman. There's one famous movie that came out a few years ago, and it's a very good line in the movie. I think I've mentioned it before. And Jack Nicholson, the movie is called As Good As It Gets. Has anyone seen that movie? It's like, I won't tell any Rita Prabhu if you put your hand up. Like that. I've seen it. Like that. It's a very, very good movie. And Jack Nicholson, he won the Academy Award for that movie. Very good acting. Like that. It's a very good movie, actually. There's many good points in it. So he writes women's novels, and he went into the office where his boss works, and the lady behind the desk, she was admiring him. How can you write these novels and you understand the way the women think? Like, you know, I don't know if you know these books, they're called Mills and Boone books. They're women's books, all about how women think. A lot of women like to read them. Because they're all about how women think, all about their emotions. So he wrote these books, that was his job. So then he got into the elevator and she said to him, how do you understand our hearts? How do you write these books so well? How do you understand how we think? And, you know, you understand us, everything about us so well. Right? And then as the elevator door was shutting, he looked at her and she said, how do you understand the women so well? He said, very easily. He said, I just think like a man. And then I take out rationality and accountability. So I thought that was a very good line. What's that?
Accountability.
Accountable. Be accountable. So for me, that's a very good way to explain the difference between a man and a woman. Not that men are rational. A lot of the times men aren't rational. A lot of the time men aren't accountable. So it's not, you can't say that one is like that, but it's just, for me, it's a very good way to understand how this world works. Yeah. Is anyone here married? Or? Right. I remember this line, in order to understand my marriage a lot of the time. Sometimes I can't understand. You know, my wife says something or does something, I just can't understand. Like, I look and I think, what does that mean? Why are you doing like that? And there's no rationality. and there is no accountability. And sometimes I say to her, why did you do that? And she said, because I felt like it. So there's no rationality, there's no accountability, but it's right. Because she felt like it. And so I think it helps a lot in marriage to understand this point. Right? For me, I understand, I always think of this all the time. It gets me through marriage. Now, I've been married for 15 years or so.
You see, when Shiva has the problem.
Yeah, everyone's got the problem. From the top to the bottom, like that. It's the same thing. So you just have to understand it. Men and women are very different. Okay? That's why, you know, the very famous book came out, Men are from Mars, Women are from Venus. We actually belong on different planets. And life would actually be good. Sometimes I think it would actually be good if we actually had separate planets. If Krishna organized things like that, I think it would be good. But somehow he wants to teach us all. Yeah, tolerance and many lessons. So he puts us all on the same planet.
Because the women
cannot understand, that is why they are blessed, because they don't understand the reality, so that's why they are actually blessed. They have more desire than twice. We're just different, that's all. Women are different and men are different. So you just have to understand these things. That's how you get through marriage. That's how you get through life. You just understand we're different. Like that. Don't try to understand everything that each other does, because we're just different, that's all. Like my wife can't understand the way I do things. You know, because in a lot of ways, women are much more practical than men. Sometimes I do things. She says, "Why do you do it like that?" And she looks at me and says, "It takes you so long to do it. You know, it takes me like 1 minute, and it takes you like 6 minutes to do the same thing. You know, why does it take?" Sometimes men aren't very practical. Sometimes we're just different. We just do different things. So you just have to understand we're different. We do things differently, and then you can tolerate each other. And we can live happily ever after. And we can go back to Goloka Vrindavan and work together happily and serve Krishna. So marriage is so blissful.
There is a very nice lecture Hari Sauri Prabhu has given on this topic. When I was, I had to read the Bhagavatam that I was doing so for my essay. You know, last session we had this essay about Brahmacharini Ashram. So that time I was just doing some research, and that time I was talking about professor. He explains this concept so beautifully. He said once and for all, I wanted to clarify what Prabhupada, because he has spent so much time with Prabhupada, I wanted to clarify what Prabhupada means, and very nicely he has explained.
In Melbourne, in his lecture?
I think he gave it in Maya. What? It's a written script of the lecture.
Any other points?
There is one famous example in Ramayana also, where Lord Rama and Lakshmana were in the forest and they were searching Mother Sita. Then Lord Shiva told Parvati that he is Lord, he is Supreme Personality of Godhead. But she didn't believe it. She wanted to test Lord Rama. This is another example how the women can sometimes, they are very strong if they decide something. They will definitely do it, no matter what. And then she apologized, yes, you were right. So as soon as Lord Ram saw Parvati, then he asked, Mother, where is Lord Shiva? How is he? So then she understood, oh yes, it's been
this is
Prabhupada
asking
about
the program where statement was brought up, and some Mataji basically sort of like raised their eyebrows and sort of said, how could you? So the way I handled it was the fact that I told them, look, clearly women are very intelligent, in fact more intelligent than men, in one sense. In fact, I had one of my managers who was working in Westpac with me, and she said women have their brain sort of connected in quite a few places, men only have in one place. I explained to them that this is exactly true, that women are more intelligent materially. Spiritually, they have to be guided, like, which is what the point is. And
I remember years ago I was preaching in Adelaide at the loft. We had a loft program there. And this, we were reading the Bhagavad Gita, and the first chapter then Prabhupada says, women are less intelligent. We had some women there, Western women who had come for the program. They're very intelligent women. So when they came to this, and then they asked me, they said, you know, how do you explain this statement? So I just said, ask my wife. So she answered it very nicely, because she's a woman. So it's much more powerful than me answering it. Because if I say, you know, women are less intelligent, it'll be good. But she was a woman. She said it. She explained it very nicely. You know, women are different. She just said, you know, we're more emotional. And when a woman says it, they say, oh, yeah, actually, that's true. You know, women don't like to be told by men. So. Is that true? Okay, so read the third paragraph. Right, that's a Siddha Raja Prabhu.
It's clear that Chitak is wanting to criticize the behavior of his friend Lord Shiva. Because Lord Shiva was sitting with his wife on his side. Parvati was sitting on his side. Then the Lord Shiva wanted to criticize Chitakin for extremely posing as a great devotee but being interested in enjoying with the Vidyadhari women. These were all friendly jokes. There was nothing serious for which Chitakin should have been cursed by Parvati. Upon hearing the instructions of Lord Shiva, Parvati must have been very much ashamed for causing Chitaketu to become a demon. Mother Parvati could not appreciate Chitaketu's position, and therefore she cursed him. But when she understood the instructions of Lord Shiva, she was ashamed.
So, what is Mother Parvati's good quality? Is that when she's corrected by her superior, by Lord Shiva, immediately she accepts the instruction. So that is the good quality of a devotee. That's what we must learn from Parvati's example. That when we are corrected by a senior devotee, we accept it and we adjust our behavior. We adjust our mentality. So this should be the quality of all devotees, ideally. Is that when we have some sort of instruction given to us by the senior Vaishnava, we accept it. And then we adjust accordingly. That. Even like, you know, yesterday and today I was spending some time with Virajan Prabhu, and, you know, sometimes I say things I can see, you know, immediately his facial expression or like that I can see, no, my mood is not wrong or what I'm saying is not right, or so then you immediately have to adjust. Because the senior devotee, he's instructing you. So the senior devotee is giving you some advice, some instruction, then immediately you have to see, this is not pleasing him, so I have to go in a different direction now. So this is the way you learn as devotees. And when the senior devotee is giving you some guidance, you see he's pleased, then you're going in the right direction. If he's displeased, then you adjust your mentality. So Parvati, she immediately adjusted. As soon as she saw that Lord Shiva was displeased, then immediately she adjusted her mentality. So... why was it that the Lord Shiva was speaking like this to Chitraketu? Actually, they were just having some jokes. Why do friends joke around? Because it increases their affection for each other, their love for each other. That's why we joke. When you're really good friends, then you say all sorts of things to each other. Just like I have a very good friend, Tridish Prabhu. I stayed with him when I was having some rest up in Mwalamba. I stayed with him. So we were brahmacharis together. We used to live there together in the ashram for many years. Yeah. So Tridish, he was a brahmachari. We were brahmacharis together. So then I was staying with him. And he has another devotee. He has like an upstairs. Another devotee is staying there, upstairs. She's like renting the upstairs part of him. So Tridish and I were there downstairs in the kitchen. And we were speaking to each other. And she was upstairs. She doesn't know, like, we're good friends. And it sounded like we were having an argument. She was saying that, and I was saying that. He was saying, you know, you're like, and I was saying, you're like this. And then she came out, and she said, is everything okay? We were just laughing, you know, because we were just having fun together. Because it makes our relationship sweeter. You know, he says things to me, and if you heard them from an external point of view, you'd think the person really doesn't like me. You know, but friends, they joke like this. It builds the rasa. So Chitraketu, he said to Lord Shiva, he said,
You were sitting there with the wife on your lap. You're giving Bhagavatam class, you've got your wife on your lap. And Lord Shiva looks up to Chitraketu and he says, and you're driving around the universe with women? Yeah. You're up there singing the glories of the Lord with women? You know? You know, at least I'm in like a secluded place. At least I'm like, you know, being recluded. You're just driving all over the universe like this. You know, at least I'm like, you know, what? It was just a joke. They were just having some joke like that. But Parvati, then she reacted. She said, hey, who are you? So what was she thinking? She was thinking, this guy's just a kshatriya. He's just some minor king in the universe, right? And my husband is Mahadev. But devotees, when one devotee is very advanced and another advanced devotee he recognizes, he doesn't judge according to externals. He doesn't think, oh, this person is not worthy of my association. But a devotee always looks at the devotional quality of the other person. He thinks this person is very exalted, I will associate with him. So you see in the example of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Gaurakishore Babaji Maharaj, now, the Gaurakishore Babaji Maharaj used to come to Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house and he would be dressed up like a total mendicant. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was like a high court judge. But Gaurakishore Babaji Maharaj, he was just wearing a loincloth like a Babaji. And he would come and immediately Bhaktivinoda Thakur would take him because he understands this person is exalted. I want his association. Externally, we always think, oh, who am I associating with? And people always in the material world, they judge other people. I will associate with this person because they look like this, they dress like this. But a devotee doesn't look like that. A devotee thinks, what is the devotional quality or the devotional advancement of this person? I want to associate with this person because they're very advanced devotionally speaking. So this was the relationship between Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Gaurakishore Babaji Maharaj. Even one time, there was a bit of a disagreement between Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Gaurakishore Babaji Maharaj for some reason. There was some light minor. So Gaurakishore Babaji Maharaj, he went and sat on the veranda or on the porch of the prostitute's house in Navadvip. So he went and sat there because he knew Bhaktivinoda Thakur was angry with him. He was looking for him. So he thought, well, if I sit here, he'll never come to the prostitute's place, so he'll never find me. So he sat there for 3 days just chanting japa. Bhaktivinoda Thakur couldn't find him. Then finally he came back. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, where were you? He said, I was sitting on that prostitute's doorstep because I knew you would not come there. So they would have some, you know, they'd say things to each other like this, but very deep relationship. But it's based not on the externals. It's based on the quality of the devotee. We look for the devotees according to their quality. According to the devotional capacity or the advancement, then we want to associate with that devotee. We should never judge the devotee according to the externals. I can't associate with them. What will the other people think of me? No, this person is exalted, so we should take their association. So, any points?
I think I'm not sure, but I'm thinking that Gaurakishore Das Babaji went to prostitutes because everyone was coming and bothering him for material blessings. You know how in the Srimad Bhagavatam it's the bent soul blessed, you get all the material without.
I think he was at that point, from my memory, he was in the latrine. He went to an abandoned latrine. That was a different example. But yeah, he was in a latrine, and then people would not come because it smelled so bad and everything. So. Any other points? Okay. Sri Shukadev Goswami said, O King, after hearing this speech by her husband, the demigoddess Uma, the wife of Lord Shiva, gave up her astonishment at the behavior of King Chitraketu and became steady in intelligence. So one of the 26 qualities of the devotee is Gambhira. Gambhira means? Grave. Devotee is very grave, very sober. So devotee is like this. When he sees a senior devotee is correcting him, immediately he becomes sober. And he thinks, oh, now I'm being corrected, so I have to change my mood. Sometimes we joke around, or even with the senior devotees, sometimes we have some jokes.
If you see the senior devotee begins to correct you, he does not appreciate your mood, then immediately you have to become grave. You have to become sober, and you have to accept the instruction. So Parvati immediately, as soon as she sees Lord Shiva is correcting her, then she becomes very serious. The great devotee, Chitraketu, was so powerful that he was quite confident to curse Mother Parvati in retaliation. But instead of doing so, he very humbly accepted the curse and bowed his head before Lord Shiva and his wife. This is very much to be appreciated as the standard behavior of a Vaishnava. So why was Chitraketu able to do this? Because he's absorbed in the spiritual energy, the Devi Prakriti. Mahatmanas tumam parta devim prakritim ashrita. A devotee is absorbed in the internal energy. What is the nature of the internal energy? It is Hladini Shakti. Hladini Shakti means bliss, potency. So a devotee is so absorbed in bliss, in Krishna consciousness, that he does not become affected by the external energy. In other words, the devotee is so blissful in Krishna's service that he doesn't become reactive when someone curses him, or someone speaks badly to him, or someone acts in a way which is somewhat offensive. Devotee never feels disturbed. So, a devotee will always tolerate those kind of things. And this was Prabhupada's example. You see Prabhupada so many times, he just tolerated. Even when people were being very aggressive towards Prabhupada, Prabhupada would just tolerate. And this is because they're absorbed in such a high state of consciousness. If you're absorbed in a lower state of consciousness, then you'll react. Just like last week, I was at the temple and someone spoke very harshly to me. And then because I was feeling under the modes of nature, because I was tired and like that, then I reacted to them. Then I thought later that, you know, if my consciousness was more pure, then I wouldn't have reacted. I would have just absorbed it like that. It's hard for us because we're not so advanced. So sometimes, even though you know you want to be in a higher level of consciousness, but because you're affected by the modes of nature, then sometimes you react. But actually when your consciousness is more exalted, on the Shuddha Sattva platform, then you don't become affected by these things. Just like you see Srila Prabhupada, he was absorbed on the Shuddha Sattva platform. So he never became affected, even when he was spoken to very harshly or so forth. Just like he was in Paris one time, he was giving the lecture to the students. And Prabhupada was saying in the lecture, he was saying first class, second class, third class, fourth class people. And then at the end, one of the students stood up and he said, "And what class are you?" I suppose you are the first class. Prabhupada said, "No, I'm fifth class. I'm servant of the others." So even when he was challenged or spoken to very harshly, he did not react. So this, we have to practice this. We have to raise our consciousness beyond the modes of material nature.
But sometimes he will react.
Sometimes.
Yes, because sometimes you sit down, you know, like so many times, he will react.
Yeah, he would do both points. Yeah, that's okay. The point is we have to make sure we're reacting from the right platform, that's all. Sometimes when we say, "You sit down," we're not saying it from the... We're just saying it out of the mode of passion. Because we just react, we're just responding like that. But Prabhupada is free from the false ego, so...
Said that when you are on the ground floor, from an elevator, when you look out and you have glass walls and you are on the ground floor and everything appears very big, but as soon as the elevator goes up, then whatever was appearing big starts appearing very tiny, especially going up on high floors. So she said that is how our consciousness should be. If it's absorbed very much in Bhagavatam and in Krishna, then it is like looking at the problems from the top of the building, then all these problems will appear very tiny and you would react so much to them. But if your consciousness is down, you know, on the ground level, then they will appear too big and you may want to just react and you keep messing with all those problems. important to write that elevator up by being in the consciousness of Bhagavatam.
Being cursed by Mother Durga, Bhavani, the wife of Lord Shiva, that same Chitraketu accepted birth in a demoniac species of life. Although still fully equipped with transcendental knowledge and practical application of that knowledge in life, he appears as a demon at the fire sacrifice performed by Twashta, and thus he became famous as Vritrasura.
The word Yoni is generally understood to mean the deep, family, group, or species. Although Vritrasura appeared in a family of demons, it is clearly said that his knowledge of spiritual life still existed. His spiritual knowledge and the practical application of that knowledge in life were not lost. Therefore, it is said that even if a devotee falls down for some reason, he is still not lost. Once one is advanced in devotional service, the spiritual assets are never lost under any circumstance. Whatever spiritual advancement he has achieved continues. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Even if a bhakti yogi falls, he takes birth in a rich family or family of brahmanas, in which he again starts devotional activities from the point where he left off. Although Vritrasura was known as an asura, or demon, he did not lose his consciousness of Krishna or devotional service.
Any points?
Bharat Maharaj, even though he was in the body of a deer, he did not have connection, assets did not get lost, and very quickly he did become Sarvarat.
Any other points? Abhigrama Nashosti, Prachavadana Lavijate, Swapam Apyashan, Dhanashan, Traita Mahapurvaya. So, Alpa. Alpa means very little. So, just by doing your devotional service, you are guaranteed of getting a better position in your next life. This is guaranteed by Krishna. Krishna says many times in Bhagavad Gita, if you do devotional service to Him, in your next life, you're guaranteed you will get something better. Even in this life, you're guaranteed you'll get something better. Devotional service always improves. Krishna makes better and better arrangements for the devotees. The more you surrender to Krishna, the more He gives you a better situation to serve Him. And then the more you surrender, Krishna gives you even a better situation. But it may not be the way you expect. Sometimes when Krishna is giving you His mercy, then He's taking things away. Prabhupada explains this in the Krishna book. He says the devotees of Lord Shiva, they get more opulence the more they worship Lord Shiva. The more you worship Krishna, the more He takes things away. Because His name is Hari. Hari means lion. The lion takes things away. Just like if the lion walks in here now, what will he do? He'll take whatever he wants. There's no resisting him. You can't do anything. That's what Krishna is like. If he wants, he can just take away whatever he wants, whenever he wants to. So he does for us what is the best for us. So the more we surrender, he gives you better and better opportunities to serve him. So that is Krishna's mercy. Whereas Lord Shiva, he may do the opposite. He is Ashutosh. So he may just give you more material facility. The Krishna, well, he may give you material facility, but he may not also. He may take everything away. But for a devotee, it's guaranteed that you will come closer to him. The more you serve him, the more you will come closer to him. And you will always get a better situation. In your next life, you'll get a better situation. You might even get the supreme destination, the Param Gati. Krishna speaks about this in the Bhagavad Gita. Some devotees go to the spiritual world after this lifetime. Hands up if you want to go to the spiritual world.
Yes.
Chitraketu was a great... No, 39. My dear King Pariksit, you inquired from me how Vritrasura, a great devotee, took birth in a demoniac family. Thus I have tried to explain to you everything about this. Chitraketu was a great devotee, Mahatma. If one hears this history of Chitraketu from a pure devotee, the listener also is freed from the conditional life of material existence. One who rises from bed early in the morning and recites this history of Chitraketu, controlling his words and mind, and remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead, will return home back to Godhead without difficulty. So, Prabhupada explains that you have to hear Srimad Bhagavatam from a devotee. If you hear from someone who's not a devotee, you will not get the actual import of the Bhagavatam. Just like His Grace Prana Prabhu was here in Melbourne briefly a month ago or so. Do you know Prana? Right. He is the Gurukul headmaster. He used to be here in Melbourne. Yeah, he runs the Auckland Gurukul. So he's one of the top devotees in education in ISKCON. So he told me that in England they have these Avanti schools, which they've opened.
Yeah.
There's two of them now in London. But he said that not all of the teachers have been devotees. Sometimes they have to get people from the outside world. Yeah, they're Christians or Hindus, but maybe not devotees. And he said even in his school in Auckland, he said over the last 10 years, several times they didn't have teachers, so they had to hire people from the outside. And he said they can teach the curriculum, they can teach the kids all of the academics, but they can't give them bhakti. So you can only get bhakti from a bhakta. You can only get devotion from a devotee. You can't get it from someone else. Someone can teach you the Bhagavatam. We can pay someone to come and teach Bhagavatam. They can't give you bhakti. Academics, from an academic understanding, you can't get bhakti. There's even people in the academy, right, who are scholars who study the Bhagavatam even, but they can't understand the Bhagavatam. Even there is the example in Mahaprabhu's pastimes of Devananda Pandit, who had memorized the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. He knew the whole 18,000 verses of the Bhagavatam from memory, but he didn't understand the Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm. So it is not academics that makes you understand the Bhagavatam. It is only bhakti. And you can only get bhakti from a bhakta, from a devotee. And you see that this is explained in the Harinam Chintamani, that bhakti is infused from a devotee. Someone who is very advanced in Krishna consciousness, just by being in their association, bhakti emanates from their personality. And from their personality, you understand what is bhakti. It's called bhakti shakti. It emanates from their person. So this is the potency of a very advanced devotee. Now, how did ISKCON start? Right? One bhakta. One pure devotee. Amala bhakta. Right? And because that person had bhakti, and because it infused from him to others, they understood what is bhakti or what is devotion. And then so many other people got it. So this is how bhakti is transferred from one person to another. If you don't have bhakti, you can't give it to someone else. So it cannot be heard from a professional person. It must be heard from a devotee. Any points?
My mother raised his prayers for Lord Shiva and Lord Parvati also. When I asked her to only pray for pray to Krishna, she said when Krishna and Radharani and even the gopis, they were praying to, when they were here on planet Earth, they were praying to Lord Shiva and Lord Parvati also. Like when the gopis and the Radharani prayed to have a husband, Krishna,
Kachiyam.
Yeah, and also Sita Devi prayed to Gauri Mata before getting married to Ramchandra. So she asked me that when they did themselves as a respect to the Devi God, so why we are being taught to pray with him?
They can pray, but you have to pray to Shiva in the right way. Like in the morning, before I chant my japa, I pray to Lord Shiva. Right, but I pray to him as Gopishwara Mahadev. Right, Kshetrapal, who is the guardian of the holy Dharma, is the lord of false ego. So I pray to him, please reduce my false ego, so that one day I can enter into Vrindavan, into the holy Dharma. So we pray to Lord Shiva, but you pray to him in the right way. That's the point. You must have the correct siddhanta, or the correct understanding. It is okay to pray to Shiva or Parvati, but you must pray to him in the right way. That's the point. We don't have objection. Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes prayers to Lord Shiva, that they must be, you must understand Shiva Tattva properly. Shiva is not Vishnu, that's the point. Any other points? Srila Prabhupada ki.
Yeah.